5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I'm John Miglosh for the Wisconsin DMA and the International Society for Strategic Marketing. Okay, say hi if you're out there. Put your little comments in there, and I can usually see them if they're on LinkedIn or on YouTube. So let's say hello and let me know where you're from. Okay, let's get over to Tom Fishburne right away and see what he's got to say. And there he is. Oh, it's kind of funny looking. Let's see. It's always the opposite of what I think. There we go. It's hard to fit his in a little bit because he makes it so I can't PDF him exactly. But anyway, it says, back to normal. When can we get back to normal and start resisting technology and ignoring changing customer needs again? On a Zoom call. And that's kind of the way it is. I mean, the fact is, it is the way it is, right? It is the way it is. So last year, Professor Scott Galloway described COVID-19 as an accelerant, not a change agent. Okay, let's see if we can get this. We can't get Scott in here worth 10 cents. I mean, Tom in here worth 10 cents, but... there we go. The pandemic's most enduring impact will be as an accelerant, not a change agent. The biggest question facing the world as the pandemic recedes will be, will these accelerations stick? The big changes were in e-commerce to online education to remote healthcare. Yeah, it'd be hard if you had a university other than a really big name university like the University of Wisconsin, world famous, you might have trouble selling the benefits of hundreds of thousands of dollars of education when, you know, the same stuff's available on YouTube. I learn a lot on YouTube every day. If I just could get another degree, like I need another degree. One of these accelerations is that it finally forced many organizations to respond overcoming a logjam of institutional resistance. Okay, well, you know, and I was the kind of guy, you know, when I actually got employees like me, I could see why my bosses, you know, got tired of me. I was the guy who said, well, you know, we could do it this way and it would be better. And it might not have been better, but it would have been different. And I was always advocating for change and trying something else. And, you know, that's why I like direct mail, because you could do it both ways and see which one was the winner. And that is a wonderful place to be in life, because you can't really do it with life. You know, I took the LSATs for law school, and what would my life have been if I would have gone? Don't know. You can't do split tests in your own life. It doesn't work. Okay, but for many, forward progress will be mitigated by operational, organizational, and cultural inertia. You know, there's a lot of it, cultural inertia. But, you know, there's other things at play here. For example, my wife, now that, you know, she could go out and shop a little bit, decided to go shopping at Bed Bath & Beyond, I think it was. And she went there, and the store was closed. And she went to, I think, Marshall's, and the store was closed. And a couple others, and the store was closed. So if you beat up retail enough, then you can't go back to normal, because it's not there anymore. Now, maybe it'll come back. The choices will come back. But, you know, that's also what happens when you in the name of progress, you know, like burn down cities. They don't come back right away. Watts took 25 years or something to recover from the 60s riots. Okay, so instead of risking anything, let's play it safe by continuing our slow decline into obsolescence. And, you know, we laugh at that, but that's a pretty common path that most people take. You know, this guy's got gray hair, and he's like, you know, I can make it to my pension or whatever. Maybe somebody will come along and buy us for our assets. Or maybe some young guy will come along, or girl, with some really brilliant idea that I believe in, right? So change for its own sake is probably idiotic, let's just say. Okay, and this is one that I think Tom is especially enamored with, because he puts it in his regular stuff, but he puts it in all the time. But I do like this one. Okay, let's go over to the future of email. Microsoft reports another hack threat to the future of email advertising. Wouldn't that be something? Do you think that the hacks are actually going to take out email and not have the ability to just wing stuff back and forth through the wires? Well, this is kind of clickbait. I was excited about this because I thought, well, that'd be interesting if there were a threat to future email advertising. And note the word advertising, okay? What the article goes on to say is, okay, let's go. Yet another large-scale email system hack. Okay, we got a large-scale system hack. What would a large-scale system hack be for Microsoft? What do you think? I mean, I was trying to think. You know, 300 million users. I don't know what the number of users are, but it wouldn't surprise me. It's free, kind of, you know. They're selling you and your data, but, it, you know, to you, there's no obvious cost. So it turns out the latest breach was reported yesterday, and it was 3,000 email accounts. And it wasn't really a hack of the servers. It wasn't a server breach, which is really the way to get your hands on the data. It was a phishing email spoof message that looks like it's coming from Microsoft. I got one or two of these, and I thought, gee, that really does look like it's coming from Microsoft. Now, lucky for me, I almost don't use Microsoft at all for anything. So it's a little bit like when I get those Wells Fargo, your Wells Fargo account has been compromised. Okay, I don't have one. Limit your vendors and you will have a defense against very cleverly crafted messages that look important. Or your automobile warranty is about to expire. Yeah, okay. I drive a really nice car, Lexus LS, but it's not in warranty, let's just say. So anyway, Microsoft blames Nobellum, but you know, really it's tricking people into providing their password to their Microsoft email. That's what it's really doing. And they, out of how many million that they sent out, they got 3,000 people dumb enough to give them the password and let them in. So this is just clickbait. It's not going to kill email advertising, I hate to say. Okay, so here's a good article. Street Fight Magazine. And Mike Cernovich says, if there's a basketball game going on and something else on another corner, if there's a street fight, everybody will want to watch the fight. Okay, did you know that 90% of direct mail is opened? What? You lost me right there. Are you kidding me? In my house? No. Now, I've learned since that some of the study that produced this ridiculous point, because you know that it isn't. You know that you can look at the indicia and you can look at the return address and, you know, heck, I wouldn't say 90% of direct mail comes in an envelope. It's more like 10%, which is where they get this from. They considered a postcard to be opened if you looked at it, which they don't know. So automatically, all postcards and all flyers and self-mailers are opened because they're not closed. They're not enclosed in an envelope. You know, sometimes, you know, we complain about digital and their stupid headlines, and there's a couple more that came out today, but and 60% of catalog recipients visit the company's website. It could be that they mailed the people that visited the website, but it isn't the other way around. It isn't because you got a catalog you automatically go over to the website. I mean, in what time frame? I get Land's End catalogs and I buy on Land's End a lot. At least a lot for me compared to any other vendor. It's one of my few brand loyalties. And so eventually I get there. You know, every fall I buy more turtlenecks and fleeces. So it's like, anyway. So now that I don't believe anything in the first paragraph, I will go on. Millennials who collectively spend $600 billion, and what is that about anyway? It would be much better to figure out the revenue per person. This isn't a meaningful number, but anyway. Recent data shows millennials are more influenced by direct mail than online ads. And again, is that surprising? When there's 5,000 online ads that you see in a day and you only get 4 pieces of mail? You know, again, it falls right out of the way things are. 68% of millennials read printed media from retailers, and 64% prefer getting them through the mail. And, you know, sometimes I feel like we just hype ourselves up with these kind of statistics and happiness. But, you know, I don't read 64% of my mail. I might glance at it. I don't mind mail. I'm not in love with mail. Don't sell me on mail because people love mail. It could be more effective, but as usual, there isn't one solid test in here at all. Not one case study. Nothing. Well, yes, there is. There's a couple of case studies, kind of. Okay? So, direct mail software. And again, what does this mean, software? You know, software will bring changes. Yeah, okay. Direct mailers or agencies required 4 to 6 weeks to set up, track, and send a campaign. Now marketers can execute a campaign in a day or less. With software, again, software, that sends targeted direct mail as readily as an email marketing campaign. Okay, good. We have software. But if you're going to do a real direct mail campaign with more than, you know, more than auto triggers and other stuff, I recommend it takes a little more time than that. Think about it a little more. Split test a little more. Set it up right. Do direct marketing. Don't just fling mail out. And see what's going on. And maybe in your articles you'll have case studies where you can say, package X got opened twice as much as package Y. Or this headline. Or click-through. Or sales. Or profits. Okay, so AI, there's another, you know, and rarely is AI much different than more software. We can leverage AI to intelligently route postcards based on printing and postage efficiencies. Well, basically, the more you mail into a carrier route, the better, and the more you print, the better, as far as your cost per piece goes. So I don't know what that's new. Trigger postcards. You can trigger them programmatically. So now we've got programs, software, and AI all working together. Okay, but here's a case study. Consider this. You're making a food delivery, you're marketing a food delivery service. A diner scrolls through Facebook and sees an ad to download your online delivery app. Does anybody download delivery apps? You know, I might order, but you better have a website that works on my mobile phone and I can order from. Anyway, but let's say that happens. The consumer downloads it with the 200 or 300 that are also on their phone and proceeds to order a couple of dishes for delivery but doesn't order again. A week or two later, this consumer receives a personalized postcard in the mail with a photo of one of the dishes ordered that night. Or maybe it's a menu picture. I doubt if it's a picture of that item ordered that night. But hey, who knows? Maybe you can get your staff to take pictures of everything. Directing, unless it's, you know, their post of the beautiful beautiful dinner they ordered online and want to post it on Instagram, and you follow them around and grab the picture and send it back to them in a postcard. That'd be creepy beyond words. Directing to a trackable landing page to sign up for your email newsletter in exchange for a coupon or checkout to save 10% off their next order. You might want to test that. That doesn't sound like very much, and you're always better off with simplicity and change the offer to, you know, what's your average order? $30? That's only $3. I would say $5 off with a $30 order. That'd be about 15%, and it's probably gonna pull more. Test. Okay, so that's at least an example of what they're talking about. You can retarget lapsed customer segments based on seasonal products, estimated lifetime value, estimated return rates, attribution windows with personalized postcards, incentives to keep customers coming back. You know, when we worked with Cabela's, I can tell you, they would mail you big catalogs for 12 months. You know, you bought in the fishing season, and they'd mail you these postcards later after you didn't buy anything else because you didn't want anything else. Maybe you didn't want to hunt, or you didn't want boots, or you didn't want bow hunting. And so they'd come around to fishing, mail you a couple times, and then they wouldn't mail you a catalog again. I surveyed maybe 40 or 50 people in hunting stores and asked them if they had ever, you know, heard of Cabela's, and they all say, I used to get that catalog. That's what everybody said. I used to get their catalog. So, and the truth is that all they had to do was fill out the postcard and send it back. This was, of course, in the 90s when it was, you know, there was the internet, but most people weren't paying much attention to it. And nobody did. So mailing a customer a postcard to get them back is pretty ineffective as mail goes. There's a lot more effective things you can do. But, you know, it might be better than digital. Now, this was a real humdinger. Trust and technology go hand in hand. This person really loves technology. The more personalized and targeted the mail, the more trust the brand will build with the individual receiving it. Not necessarily. You can over-personalize. You can spell their name wrong. You can get their first name and last name mixed up. You can get their gender mixed up. You can go for the moon and try to get their Instagram content into a mailing and probably annoy them forever. So I don't think it might be bimodal. A little personalization might go a long way, but a lot could kill you. So none or a lot are probably worse than a little. But anyway, this Liam Oliver is the general manager of Grow Mail and Direct Mail Manager, which is probably a software package. I'm getting that, you know, that he. So anyway, so Liam, I hope this helps you, and I hope you do some real testing and have some real clients that know real direct mail marketing. Have a great day. Like and share. Your friends will know you're smart. Bye-bye.